morning. Today is Thursday, June the 25th. Oh, are we over here?
Hi, it's me again. It's Thursday, June the 25th. Joining us this morning, out of the swamp, behind closed doors even, we understand. Yeah. Victor Aguilera, good morning, sir.
Good Thursday morning, yeah, behind closed doors in the safety of my office here.
In the fog, don't forget the fog bank also.
Yeah, you know, speaking of fog, so it's 6 a.m. this morning, I had a workout with my applicants, and I thought it was going to be a little sunny, but my God, it was so foggy out there, and that's still out there. It's still out there, but hopefully that'll break and we can enjoy some sunshine today.
So a little drippy, you know, but when you had them have to jump in the bay anyway and swim the 5 miles, it probably didn't matter too much, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know how that is.
No, I don't, but I understand others do. All right, Winston, why do we say it?
Let's go with a simple one today. School. What is the origin of the word school?
Is this the educational one or the fish one?
Or does it say? It doesn't say.
Because people who go to school have class, and that's why.
Oh.
I don't know.
No, you know, I actually know this one, and I'm amazed that I know this. So back in the day, and I'm talking back in the day, they used to call it cool, C-O-O-L. But what happened over time is cool began to mean actually cool, and so they had to rename school. It was the politically correct thing to do back in the day, and forever. Now we just call it school. Mark that down in your books. That's how.
Well, you get points for originality. It's from the Greek and originally meant leisure or leisure. In ancient Greece, only a person with leisure could go to school.
Okay, wow. Yeah, it was the rich that could afford it, yeah. Huh, okay.
I never would have guessed that at all. Leisure and school, no.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was junior high school. Oh, boy. Well, I would imagine your guys' and gals' life has changed a little bit in the last couple of months, Victor, with some of the anti-police sentiment that has reared its head again. And over the decades, we've talked that there's always a segment of the population that is anti-badge.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sure. And, Some of them are my relatives.
Yeah. And, yeah, coming out of this 60s, right, with the civil unrest in Vietnam and law enforcement being put into a position that they may not have personally supported, but, you know, they had to professionally. Things kind of come, they go, they wane, they ebb. What are you seeing out there now?
You know, for us on the California Highway Patrol, yeah, it is interesting. I will say that for me, after 18 and a half years of being a public servant by way of the CHP, it's interesting. It really is. And beyond that, it's sad. I get it. But if you think about law enforcement in general, public servants, if somebody wanted to find the most accessible and maybe prolific and available arm or a form of government, you know, in the form of an agent, law enforcement, you know, I would say, I would wager that that's one of the areas where, yeah, if you wanted to lash out at the government, finding a cop is a very easy way to do that because, again, they're around, they're accessible. When you call, they arrive. You know, they're predictable. In other words, they respond to incidents. Heck, everybody knows their phone number. It's 911. And so, yeah, we're on the forefront at all times. We're in people's minds. They see us driving down the roadways. They see us, you know, from the time that they're kids in school, when we go in and, you know, read to children. We're there when, you know, mom and dad make a mistake. We're so obviously a part of the government that, yeah, it's an easy target. It really is. And so I get it. I get it. It's easy to blame the people that wear the uniforms because you can always tell which ones are the cops, you know. But it is interesting here at the California Highway Patrol. You know, for us, it really is. It's business as usual. We do what we've been doing. We haven't always done things perfectly. However, I will say that I believe we're a dynamic agency, and that when we recognize a shortcoming, we work to improve that. We work to make things better. I can honestly say that before I was a cop, a public servant, you know, I didn't have the best opinion of cops in my mind, especially in college. And now, in an ironic way, now that I am a peace officer, I guess maybe I have the ability to see both sides of the fence. There's people that I work with, or have worked with, I should say, in the past that, I didn't really like them personally. I thought they were maybe a little badge heavy is what we call it. They took themselves a little too seriously. They saw themselves at being at war with the public versus a servant to the public. There's enough of those people that have that mindset or that trajectory in the way they conduct their business while they're in uniform that, yeah, it tends to give us a bad name. But I will say, for my part, you know, when you ask, what are we doing? I'm doing the same exact thing I've been doing for 18 years. I come to work. I work my butt off. I work with integrity. I work with love. I work with dedication. Everything that the CHP has taught me to do and that I brought on board, you know, beforehand, I do that anyway. My son asked me some interesting questions through all this. And one of the things he brought to my attention is he showed me a post on Instagram, and it was called like something about eight things that people demand cops do. And I was reading the list, and I was so happy to tell him, guess what? We've been doing that for 18 years. The de-escalation, working on our mindset versus just being so reactive and you know, being judgmental towards people. That's exactly what the CHP taught me to do in the academy, and that's exactly what the CHP has told me, that if I don't do those things, I'll be without a job.
That tends to bring focus around a little bit, too, I would suspect.
Yeah, it does. It re-edifies the fact that we are hired as public servants and that our positions were not given to us. We had to earn them through hard work and dedication and motivation. And we're not here to judge people. We're not here to give our opinion on current politics. We're here to serve the public. We're here to treat people like our neighbors and to help them when we can.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are Easy Radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Victor Aguilera from the California Highway Patrol. Victor, with some of the different, challenges, pressures, community expectations that are out there now, has the CHP come out with any do this differently edicts, or is it pretty much, you know, continue doing what you're doing, guys, because what you're doing is the right thing to do and the right way to do it?
Yeah. You know, we actually have. So here's the thing, and don't construe this as political pandering, you know, what I'm about to tell you. But for our agency, the top two people, you know, under Gavin Newsom, obviously, Commissioner Stanley is an African-American, and not only an African-American, but a wonderful person. You know, I worked under him when he was a captain back 18 years ago. And just an impressive human being, regardless of, you know, his skin color. But since we are in a politically charged climate and people do, I guess, put some value on that, yes, our highest ranking official in the CHP is an African American. Our second highest ranking official in the California Highway Patrol is an African American and a female. And so they come to us, and you know, we get emails and correspondence from them pretty regularly. And essentially what they're telling us is just to stay the course. We know what's right. We do the right things, you know, a vast majority of the time. Stick to the training. Stick to what we know is right. Don't break the law. Don't take advantage of your position. And, you know, things like some of these, I guess, hot-button topics like chokeholds. When I was in the academy in 2001, they told me specifically, you will not put a chokehold on somebody unless, you know, it rises to the occasion where you can put a bullet into a human being, right? Barring that, you will not put a person in a chokehold. And now, they didn't qualify that statement by saying, you will not put a Hispanic person in a chokehold, or you will not put a child under 12 years old in a chokehold, or a Republican in a chokehold. They said a blanket statement, you will not do it. And guess what? I've never done it. I've never had to do it. I've never been tempted to do it. I never thought of it as an option. But that's my agency. That's the California Highway Patrol. And it's been that way since I've been on this job. So it's not a new thing for us. And so that's a perfect example to answer your question when I say that we're not reinventing things here. We're doing what we've been doing.
Yeah, well, and with some of the moves, I would suspect if you were told not to, it would be tough, not because of anything other than muscle memory. You
right.
get in this situation, boom, this is what you do. But
yeah.
if you don't have to undo that, I would
exactly.
think that is something that is more beyond what should be done. You don't even think about it because it's not an option. Just pure,
yeah.
brilliant and simple.
We have ongoing training. You know, like we have to certify in our handcuffing techniques. We have to certify in what we call it PMA, our physical methods of arrest, every year to show that we're still proficient. I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter how long ago we graduated the academy. Every 3 months, we have to certify that we understand tacitly our shooting policy, our pursuit policy, our use of force policy. We have to certify and take an online test that shows that we understand the Fourth Amendment and when we can overcome that and when we better not overcome that. All these things are things that we do regularly in our agency. And so, yeah, it's not like we're doing anything new to keep up with the times. We're just continuing what we've been doing. And another thing along with training is, you know, we have a saying in the CHP, and that's you practice like you play. In other words, if you're going to start practicing chokeholds when push comes to shove and you're making split-second decisions out there in the field, you may go back to what, like you said, muscle memory or what you've trained to do. We don't train chokeholds. Matter of fact, if I try to put one on you right now, I probably wouldn't be very good at it.
It looked more like a wrestling move, right?
Yeah.
And I'd have to
like
fake it with you.
Around.
Yeah, yeah. Now, with some of your buddies that are in other departments throughout the state, are they being treated as the folks are out of the Arcata office with their interactions with the community?
You know, it's regional, I'll say that. Here in Humboldt, especially, you know, back when the local protests started, you know, we saw some flare-ups. As a matter of fact, my office mate, Officer Unsinger, and me, we were paired up, and, we went to the protests for traffic control and protection and things like that. And, I guess verbally we were mistreated by some, but the majority of the people were awesome. You know, it was great. In some other places throughout the state, they're not enjoying that as much. Some of the obvious places like the hotbeds, like San Francisco, Berkeley, Los Angeles, some of my friends who work in the L.A. area, it was a little harder for them. But like we talked about, because I've talked to people who were in the involved in the protests, they said the same thing, man, cool as a cucumber, cool as a cucumber. And that's what we do. And, you know, unless it comes to an absolute need for a use of force, cool as a cucumber. We're here as servants, not as, like, warriors or the military or anything like that. We're here to serve first.
Your buddies, Victor, that were black or Asian or Hispanic, Were they treated any differently, or was it the badge that people saw?
Yeah, they were treated homogeneously because of the uniform, you know. And I've actually said this before on your show. The first time I was called a racist was in the Bay Area, which in my mind, because my brother lived there at the time, he lived in San Francisco, and you know, I always thought of the Bay Area people as a large population or a large sector of them are well educated. You know, there's money, and you have I don't know if this is the right term, but like an elevated status, people who are self-aware and things like that.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. If you see a down power line, stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Victor Aguilera from the California Highway Patrol. Talk Shop is presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, along with Murphy's Markets. Victor, when you consider some of the different options, choices, things of that nature that are out there that we do talk about, how people can protest, how they don't protest, it's always mind-boggling to me. And because you're kind of a roads cop, you might have far more insight on this one. Why do people walk out in the middle of a highway and expect traffic to stop for them? I mean, it just seems like it's death-defying. You know, I like my knees and my ankles, thank you. I don't want to walk out in a crosswalk and dare a car to stop. But right. Yet, you know, running the stoplights are the same thing. You know, if it's overt rather than something where you didn't see that stop sign or stoplight. I don't get it. What kind of personalities do you run into when you are talking to these folks over the decade and almost two decades you've been playing cop? What do they say?
You know, that's an interesting question. And so me, here's my thing. I tend to really like people. You know what I mean? I have an interest in helping people. And so for that reason, I kind of look at people and I try to get behind their motivations, because if you do that, it's a lot easier not to judge people. But you know, you have these people that drive around and they have lifted trucks and, you know, those obnoxious things that make their truck louder. Why do people do that? Why do people you know, buy like super expensive cars that they can barely afford? You know, it's like they have a term for that. It's called conspicuous consumption. And I think that a lot of times and I have relatives who do the same thing. Like, I have relatives who were out there protesting, blocking the street. And for me, it's an outward, conspicuous way of demonstrating what you may be feeling on the inside, you know? And that's how I look at it, because if I look at it that way, I don't judge people. If I look at it that way, I don't say, oh, those people are stupid, or they're wrong, or I would never do that. So therefore, you know, there's not as much value placed on that action. If I look at it from that perspective, if it's a conspicuous outward showing of what they're feeling on the inside, then it's a group blocking traffic. And yes, it's inconvenient, and yes, it makes backup. But for them, I don't know their heart. Maybe this is a very real thing to them. Maybe they know somebody who was who experienced racism. Maybe they know somebody who whose grandfather was lynched. You know, I don't know, and I can't assume those things. So, is it right? I don't know. I would say no, I wouldn't do it, but I see why people do it.
Now,
that
how
may
about,
not be the answer that people want to hear, but I see why they do it.
How about taking it up a notch when they start breaking rolling cop cars, breaking windows of businesses, firebombing, you know, the whole Devil's Night in Detroit, that whole concept, or, even more mind-numbing to me is your team wins the world championship, pick a sport, and what do we do? We go out and we riot. How is that?
Yeah.
I've not been able ever to make that leap across that divide to have anything other than, well, I don't know, contempt is probably the word for people that act out that way. I mean, it's a whole lot different than some other ways that are more acceptable societally.
Right, yeah. You know, from my experience in being, you know, on the front lines of some protests, and some that went very well, some that devolved very quickly, is you're in there with a group of people, you know, on both sides, really, and that you get into this area of psychologically where you experience like a hyper suggestibility, and sometimes that's all it takes is just one flash to what's that term, like the flash point, you know, the point where a gas becomes flammable and starts turning into flames. You get to that flash point, and then it's easier to go up to the next level and then the next level, and next thing you know, people are breaking windows and looting and things like that, and the cause, the message is, man, it's been trampled under so many feet by then that it's largely lost, I would say.
Yeah. Well, certainly the herd mentality is something that is prevalent, and it's certainly and has been well documented in a number of applications. But I mean, there's still the basic core of what you are. To run counter, I don't think you would ever throw a rock through a window. Even of an abandoned building that had a lot of the windows broken out already.
I'd be afraid the cops would come find me.
I look at it and go, what do I get out of this?
Right.
Zero. Yeah. And somebody loses. Well, why do I want to? And then just kind of move on. So I have a very tough time projecting into that, but I thought maybe you'd, with some of your experiences, had tapped into
locally, as a matter of fact, I was talking to you about my partner, Officer Unsinger, and me being at the protests in Eureka and here in Arcata, and we actually saw something very interesting. It was actually nice to see when the crowd started getting really unruly and trying to really incite each other. There was a lot of people that we saw leaving, and as they were passing us, they said, "This is getting out of my comfort zone. We're leaving. This is not what I came to do." And they thanked us, and they went back to their cars and continued to protest, you know, within the confines of their house or whatever they chose to do. But I thought, okay, those are the people right there those are like people like me, I guess, you know, where you see the danger and you think, no, this is time to step out.
Right. Well, and antagonists oftentimes, or anarchists, will hide in the crowd, you know, safety in numbers kind of thing, so that they don't stand out. If they're bent on mayhem.
Yeah, some people are. Thankfully, they're in the minority.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to NorthCoastSBDC.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Victor Aguilera because Paul Kraft decided not to show up. Huh?
That guy.
This vacation thing, the whole nine yards. Yeah, fine.
Lucky guy.
So we do have 4th of July coming up next weekend, a three-dayer for many, probably a three-and-a-half-dayer for some.
Right.
I would suspect that you guys are doing the maximum enforcement weekend for that. Are there any specific concerns about this 4th of July, Victor, that you guys have talked about?
So I haven't heard anything specific. You know, during these times, you know, we call them, the MEP, the maximum enforcement. We're hyper-vigilant because, as we've seen, if we just let things occur, it can get pretty wild. You know, people tend to imbibe a little more freely in celebration. And as it's been proven, sometimes you don't make the best decisions after that, and a lot of people decide to drive. So, yeah, we will be out there in force, specifically looking for impaired drivers, specifically looking for anything that we would consider a PCF, which is a primary collision factor. That would be like speeding, unsafe lane changes, running stop signs, all those things. Because ultimately what we're after is the safest outcome to the 4th of July for people to celebrate appropriately, responsibly, and stay out of jail and not go away with a ticket in their hand. That ultimately, that's our goal. I have yet to see that occur in my tenure as an officer. There's always somebody that wants to go to jail or chooses to break the law. Matter of fact, we had this, I don't want to say it was a joke, but it was kind of this running theme. Like every Father's Day, we would say, man, I wonder if we're going to take a father to jail. And sure enough, for like 3 or 4 years, for every Father's Day, I had to take a father to jail because he was, DUI. Same thing with 4th of July. How many patriots are we going to have to arrest today celebrating the 4th of July? And it's almost ironic, that you're celebrating this great accomplishment in our country's history, yet you end up in jail.
Well, I wonder if the dynamics are going to be significantly different this year because of the lack of the gatherings, and there's not going to be the Old Town Festival, and there's not going to be the stuff on the plaza, and 3rd of July isn't going to be happening in the same fashion in Fortuna. I wonder if it's just going to be seen as a long weekend, another day off, or, so it'll be a much ado about nothing other than, maybe visiting a cemetery or something along those lines.
Yeah, I would like to believe that, honestly. However, in my time of being a public servant by way of the CHP, human beings never cease to amaze me. They get creative, they're resilient, they are steadfast in their choice to celebrate, whether it's in a crowd of 300 on the plaza or 10 people in their backyard. Unfortunately, if I had to go with historical facts, I would say there's going to be bound to be a lot of people that are going to make poor decisions. Fortunately, for the general safety of the community, we'll be out there, and we're going to be looking specifically for those people.
Yeah, can't call them bad guys, just call them stupid. No, bad decision guys.
It's a mistake. We all make mistakes. Some are just a little bit bigger, maybe.
yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully you don't have too many of those, and you'll be able to enjoy somewhat of a normal weekend enjoying all the safe and sane fireworks that we get at the stands.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it amazing how beautiful that word normal sounds right now?
Oh, man. Yes. Thanks, Victor.
All right, take care.
All right, unlock the door. You're safe now. See everybody tomorrow.